embrace the suck. Embrace that you're going to suck at trading, that you're going to lose, that you're going to be a bad trader. If you are okay with being a loser, you will become a winner. When I first started to trade, I was taught that if something had like three touches, that was a strong support. You should take the trade off of that. No, to me, that is a level that I think is going to get broken. Just take all those stop losses out to then go back in that direction, because that's just how the market moves, you know? What can I do to get the most money out of the market? Because my strategy works, I'm getting into profit. What can I add to that? Every time I'm in profit, I actually know the best place to close at. So I teach this all the time. It's gonna sound weird, but I use the, once I started looking at it as like a numbers game and a probability game, I think that's when the profits and everything started kind of coming a lot easier for me. The biggest things when it came to my success with prop firm challenges is learning.
Folks, welcome to the show. We got Luca No Limit in the house now. He's a Forex trader over there in LA. After the show, we recorded a video where he breaks down on a price chart how he trades Asian session liquidity grabs. Now, you're going to stay tuned for that. Other things going on here at Trading Up, we've got the robot build that I'm currently working on as part of Robot Lab Live. If you do want to join that, there's a link in the description. It's looking for highs and lows to be taken out and then getting in, kind of like what Luca talks about in this show. Other things going on here, we have the sponsors. Go and check them all out. There's massive discounts below this video or in the description of the podcast. Go and check them out. So this is Blue Guardian, Black Bull, and Apex Fund Trader Funding. Folks, before we get into it, let's hear my Blue Guardian update, how I got on last week, and then dive into the show. Right, folks, here's my Blue Guardian update for the week. So we can see here that I'm minus 2.6. It was 2.3 last time, so it's basically a break-even week. Didn't start off well, though. Drew the account down here with some revenge trading. Not great. Now, this is when the DX trade thing kicked in, and for whatever reason, this chart doesn't update. So let's dive into that one and have a look. So this is the DX trade chart. Now, yeah, this was just revenge trading streak, which was not great. Three trades in about like 15 minutes. Anyway, I bought it back here with this trade that matched my system after having a good long hard think about what I was doing. Then I had a couple of not so great trades, which I'm trying to filter out, and I think I've come up with a way to do that, followed by another one that matches system. And then the last day, the price action was just really choppy. I could have walked away with a very good trade, ended up getting out break even, even at a small loss. But yeah, overall, weak break even. Now, if you're looking to get your own Blue Guardian challenge and want a 10% off coupon, then use that coupon Trading Up, all one word. There's links in the description of this video. Folks, remember, they have got MT5 still running for some clients, so please go and check them out. All right, folks, let's get on with the show. All right, folks, here we are on Trading Up. We've got Luca No Limit in the house, a Forex trader over there in LA. Welcome to the show, Luca.
Thank you so much for having me, Cam. Really appreciate it.
Hey, look, well, I know you started your trading journey in COVID. We want to sort of get that sort of first insight into how you managed to condense time down, because COVID did offer up a whole lot of time to a bunch of people out there in the world who did start trading during this time. And how did that sort of like help you, I suppose, fast track your progress throughout that time that we're all locked down at home and that sort of thing to now? And we're going to get that full story as to like, I think, believe you started in stocks to trading in Forex now. So let's dive into it.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. First, I just want to say, like, I really do appreciate being here. I used to, like, you know, we're about to go over my journey of, you know, starting in college, but I used to sit in my dorm room trying to figure out trading and watch trading that interviews, trying to like see what these people did, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And watch the back testing videos and watch people live trade and stuff, trying to figure out their strategies. And, you know, so I really appreciate that. This is an honor. But yeah, so like I said, I feel like, you know, anyone who started trading in 2020, should have their own, like, we should have our own name, you know, the COVID babies or something, because that's like, that sparked a lot of traders in the industry. There's a lot of people who all, you know, started because of that, you know what I'm saying? That was also when like crypto started booming and stuff. And, you know, it's a really good time to get in. So to answer your question about kind of how, you know, like how fast time kind of went by just from 2020 to now and kind of how I managed time with having time off to learn how to trade, you know, so how I basically started trading was from IML. I got recruited through IML, and I just remember, we'll just take it back one step, is I was a college student. I went to college all 4 years, and it was my sophomore year was 2020 when we got released and sent home. And when we got sent home, no one really knew what to do. It's not like they had work set up. You know, everyone was just trying to figure out what was kind of going on. So because I had a lot of time on my hands is when I started researching a lot of different things. Like I told you, I was into stocks, started like dabbling in like options, looking at that until I came across Forex. I felt like that was just a lot better and a lot more my speed, you know, and that's, you know, I found the IML posting, took a chance, took a risk, went for it. And I just remember, like, IML has those calls. I think it's like every day, or I forget exactly how it is, but I would be up there every single day. Every single time there was a call, doesn't matter what it was, I would be there with a notebook thinking, like, this is what I need to do. So I was a college student. I was really used to taking notes for like a teacher and everything. So I tried to like apply that same type of thing to the markets and to the IML. But like, I was quick to realize that all those calls were to teach me how to recruit, not how to trade. You know, it would be like, all right, this is how you use this indicator. And you're like, they would go over that for 5 minutes. And after, it's like, you know, it's like, all right, well, if you invite your five friends, then it'll all be free type thing. Okay. So I didn't stay in IML too long, but I loved trading. IML did not really, you know, stray me away, make me want to quit. But it opened my eyes to what like Forex could possibly do, because what comes along with IML is actually the group chats that like a bunch of signals get sent in every single day, like multiple, I want to say like 20 signals get sent into it today. If you are taking 20 trades a day, just throw your phone away. You should not be taking 20 trades a day. No one should be even sending you 20 signals a day. It's actually crazy. So it's just crazy, like, to have them sending beginners so many trades, whatever. So the reason I bring that up is because I remember my first trade I ever took, which was an IMO signal. Before I really knew buy and sells, whatever, I had the recruiter who recruited me, was kind of teaching me, and loading up an account. You know, if I had to like title this, it would be like my journey from $600 in my account to now multiple six figures. You know what I'm saying? Because I literally went from, I had like probably $1,200, $1,500 in my account. I spent the $250 on IML. And then I remember I put like $750 into a trading account. And I was like, I just wanted it to work, you know? Like, I definitely don't recommend that for anyone out there, but I was willing to take the risk. And I just remember that first signal that I sent out was JR30 sells. And oh my gosh, if anyone out there knows JR30 and how it moves and the contract sizes, imagine with like a $750 account trying to enter like a 0.1 or something, or like a one lot for exactly what it was, but it just blew the account like right away. So that was a very rough start to it, but I wasn't discouraged. You know what I'm saying? I knew that maybe if I was on the opposite side of the position and it was blue, then I would have made money, because there was times that was kind of fluctuating a little blue, a little down, and then it just blew my account. But it's kind of a long version, you know, to kind of answer your question. But yeah.
So it's funny how, like, I mean, I think there seems to be like a hurdle that people need to get over. And especially, I don't know if you got it from IML, but where you need to understand that people do actually make money in this market. I mean, mm-hmm. What got you to that point where you were like, there is hope for me here. It's not a sort of fruitless effort.
Yeah. I don't know. I think like just looking up to a lot of people in the industry, seeing like, you know, their lifestyle and stuff, which I don't ever recommend, like, you know, you're looking up to anyone and wanting to envy them. But I was like, dang, like, I would listen to their stories of, you know, from coming from a similar place that I was, where not a lot of money, maybe like not really sure what they wanted to do. And then now I see them in these cars and living this lifestyle and stuff. And I was like, dang. So it's like working for them. What can I do to kind of get to that point? So like I said, if you trade and you enter whatever lot size, even if it's like a small lot size, you'll see price fluctuate. Like when it's blue, you'll be like, dang, I literally can close this position, withdraw it. And you know what I'm saying? Like that first withdrawal is very, I want to say like cool, because you're like, dang, this is real. Like it's on my phone now. I can actually go and spend this. So I don't know. I wouldn't say I was ever discouraged that I couldn't make money in it, but I knew it was going to be hard. I definitely was someone who was blew a lot of accounts, a lot of like small live accounts trying to figure it out. And then, you know, it wasn't really until maybe like the prop firm stage when I kind of started getting like a wind of prop firms and stuff. And I started seeing people get like big payouts and learning about just risk management of only risking 1% and stuff. Cause I think that was a huge thing for me, was with these live accounts, I was risking 10%, 20%, whatever. I never really like knew the concept of like, until I was trading with a larger account of like, all right, I have a $100,000 account. If I risk 1%, only risking $1,000, and I'm able to compound that. Once I started looking at it as like a numbers game and a probability game, I think that's when the profits and everything started kind of coming a lot easier for me.
I think that it actually is a big thing. Like, especially I think back in the day when there weren't prop firms readily available, and you know, you got a 30% payout, you had to pay $2,000 a month for your desk at the prop firm, either be it virtual or physical. Now it's completely different. So back in the day, people were risking that much just to try and, you know, make their 750 turn into something usable.
100%.
Now, like, sort of, can you take us through that journey between, you know, leaving IML or moving on, doing your own stuff, to getting that prop firm funded account and then making that first withdrawal? I mean, you obviously must have come up with a strategy, done some back testing. How did it all play out?
So yeah, the funny thing is actually I'm someone who not a lot of people can say this, but I actually passed my first ever prop firm I ever did, which is very, very unlikely. I did not get a payout on it. It was an FTMO. I had the certificate. I didn't get a payout on it, but I kind of was one of those people who came to the prop firms like, oh, this should be easy because I had that experience with the first one. And when it came to like passing that first prop firm challenge, it really just came down to catching some good risk reward on indices. I don't even really trade indices anymore. But now looking back, like I said, there was times where in the moment I thought I was profitable. I thought I was like this big baller. And now looking back, I'm like, you got lucky. Like, don't think you were, you know, doing well. So yeah, getting out of IML, knew I needed to like find different ways to kind of learn, still stay in the network. But like I said, find a strategy, find my edge in the market. Everyone needs to find their edge. And started looking at YouTube, started watching a lot of videos, and then coming across a lot of Telegram channels. One of like the biggest things that like helped me honestly in that journey and in that switch from IML away was I literally got a DM from a random person. No idea, not a big account, just a literal random person with no followers and was like, hey, I started this little group chat of Forex traders. I see you follow whatever. If you'd like to be a part of it, here you go. Joined it. It wasn't selling anything. It literally was like a group chat of like 25 people, just all sending their trades daily, like what they were looking at and stuff. And I was like, this is cool. It was all like older people. I was like, what the heck? Then I came across one guy who was sending just mass profits, like NAS 100, just account flips, account flips, account. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, how can you leverage accounts like this to be able to flip accounts? I don't know, whatever. So I ended up messaging him privately and I was like, hey, what's up? I'm really curious on your strategy on everything to like kind of figure out how you're kind of doing this. Cause I told him I was a beginner, really new to it. I was only 20 years old. Like, what could I do to learn? And he was so, shout out to Kylie. I'm still friends with him. He's actually in my VIP chat. He still is around and it's so great that I still get that. But he totally took me under his wing and taught me so many little things that, got me just like trading the right way, teaching me about how to calculate pips for like how big the stop loss is, how to even close partials, just like little things that I just didn't even know how to do that IML wasn't teaching. IML was teaching me how to use their indicator, this Scholastic alligator, this thing, you know, whatever the heck it is. Out of that story, I would say like for anyone out there is just like try and network. You know, there's a lot of people out there with a lot of good things and experience. You know what I'm saying? As a 20-year-old, being able to go and talk to people who are trading for 5-10 years and hear what they have to do, they're going to stray you away from all the stuff that they failed at to then get you kind of on the right track, which is why I like to teach now. You know, the whole reason I kind of teach and why I live stream, I'm a live streamer and I live stream at night during London session, is because I remember being that lonely kid in my dorm room, not knowing how to trade, having no one to talk to, just trying to buy courses. You couldn't, like, stuff nowadays is so much more available. Like, you can go on and get so much free stuff on YouTube. There's so many people that are like, you can get a one-on-one from, like, one-on-ones. If I wanted to get a one-on-one with like someone I looked up to on YouTube back in the day, it was like $500 to thousands of dollars. You know what I'm saying? For an hour. Like, and nowadays, you know, you can get on with someone for like $100 to, you know, whatever, which to me, I think the knowledge is worth so much more. That's something that see people overlook because they think, oh, I need X amount on my account to make the money I want to make. No, you need the skill set. The money will come if you have the skill set. You know what I'm saying?
Because there is that sort of delicate balance between, and I'm thinking about the guy that you found in the chat, mm-hmm. Your own stuff and what he told you or the knowledge he gave you. I mean, there is a sort of fine line between like accepting knowledge from somebody and then, you know, I suppose curating it yourself to make it part of what you're doing. I mean, how were you able to sort of take what this guy, is it Kylie, was doing to flick into or to add into what you were doing so that you didn't completely destroy what you'd created and reinvent it? I mean, how did you do that?
That's a really good question. I feel like one thing that really got me to where I'm at today is being open-minded, being willing to learn and just not taking like no, or like, I never like telling someone they're wrong. You know what I'm saying? Everyone has their own viewpoint. Everyone has their own kind of like, yeah, like I said, just viewpoint on just different things and opinions. And I was like, you know what? He's making money in the markets. He could tell me something. And maybe if I don't agree with it, I should be open-minded and try and learn it because it could benefit me if I just try and figure out why he likes it or why he enjoys doing this, whatever. So I just feel like we were on Zoom calls, we were on FaceTimes, we were just like, he really was willing to just like literally mentor me. kind of day in, day out, like literally for free, honestly. So I hope that kind of, I got you now that I think about it. I got you, bro.
Hey folks, what a view behind me. I'm at Black Bull Markets headquarters here in Auckland, New Zealand. Speaking of views, you can get TradingView paid plans for free at Black Bull Markets, saving you up to $600 a year. That's right, get either the Essential Plus or Premium plans absolutely free, and all you need to do is trade from one lot a month at Black Bull Markets. And you can also get a 100% deposit bonus for your first deposit up to $1,000. All you need to do is click the Trading Nut link in the description below.
Yeah, like I said, I just think, you know, I just
I suppose really the question is, like, I mean, how did you change your strategy after chatting to him?
Oh.
Or did you just same strategy and go, I'm just using this as like sort of, you know, more mindset advice and that kind of thing?
I would say a little bit of both. I definitely like tried to train a strategy a little bit with like indices, which is more like I said, higher time frame, just swing plays, but I'm more of a scalper now. But yeah, I would say like the switch over. Yeah, I definitely did have to switch my strategy. I was just like a scalper. Like beginning traders are really just like one-to-one traders that are just trying to get a little 5-10 pips and then they're out. He was really showing me like, all right, yes, like your stop loss is this big, but what if you held for this? Then you're going to multiply your like what your profits are and et cetera. And then show me like structure, you know, on the 4-hour when you're like, all right, this is obviously higher low. If you're getting on a higher low, where should price possibly go to next? It's like potentially make a higher higher, at least reject a high. Why am I getting out anywhere in between that? You know what I'm saying? Like, which like a lot of beginner traders, it's like they're getting at a really good point, but they're not right into the higher high. If you know what I'm saying, like they're just like closing early. There's just so many like psychological battles and stuff that come along with it. So it's little things like that, that really got me trading like that. And then I was able to apply that to GJ. GJ is really what like got me profitable is, you know, I really dialed down trading so many pairs. Like I was just trading everything. And I was like, you know what? I keep hearing these big traders say one session, one pair, or like one session, one pair, like two trades a day or whatever. Why don't I try that? Like, I'm not really, you know, why don't I just try that? So I literally just started trading GJ, London session. And that was literally it. Like once I started doing that and realizing, all right, I'm watching the same pair every day. It did this the day before. Today, the open is like at this price. What do I think is possibly happening? What's like the higher time frames telling me? What do I expect like the daily 4-hour candle closure to look like, et cetera? And then you just go to lower time frames and define it. So, you know, anyone out there, I really recommend, like if you're having trouble with a strategy, maybe it's because you're applying that strategy to too many different pairs that might not work for. Maybe try and find one pair that you can really master and then see if you can apply that same type of stuff to other pairs. That's what I think I did. And now I trade like a couple different other pairs. But yeah, I just feel like, yeah,
were you the type of trader that like did a lot of back testing on a pair to double check that
my thesis
was going to work? And how did you do that?
So that came with time. So I have so many just like, I don't even know, like levels of my trading game of what I had to go through of switching strategies, jumping from mentor to mentor, just like trying to be like a signal bot to then, like you said, switching strategies, I think, was like the big thing for me that was just bad, because you would find a strategy that worked for a couple of times, and then right when it started like not working for a couple of times, you go and try to find another one. So kind of back to what you were saying about like sticking to one. I'm trying to think like how I want to answer that. Sorry.
It's so hard to do. I mean, in terms of like, I mean, trust me, I've been there a million times. And the thing is like, you know, you'll back test the strategy. You'll go, yep, this is, you know, I've done 50 trades. This is good. Then you'll start trading it and you'll probably make a couple of mistakes along the way is what I find.
Yeah.
And you break the rules for whatever reason, like, and you get lucky on one and then you don't on another and you go, okay, well, I can justify that. And then you get back on track. Then you have a couple of losers. Then you back test it and go, well, in actual fact, those were losers in my back test as well.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're going, well, how do I avoid those losers? And you start, that's when it goes all wrong, right? And you start veering away from the strategy. And it's like, now it's a different strategy. Now our previous backtest is invalid. And you basically screwed yourself at that point. So that is the clinical point where you need to change get over that point. And then it's almost like, don't even think, just take the next trade.
100%. I think sample sizing is huge. So I think that really came from, I'll give a shout out to Don Vo, you know, Don Vo.
Oh yeah. I've had him on. Yeah.
Yeah. You've had him on. So he was like, I really liked before I started like live streaming pretty heavy. I'm like a big live streamer now. I used to watch his live streams, or I used to just watch them after, and I followed him on Instagram. And I really liked his idea of sample sizing. He was like the king of like, all right, I'm going to do this over a period of time and record it for the whole entire year. At the end of the year, if one thing isn't working out, boom, throwing that out. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to increase my probabilities of doing that. I literally have really good YouTube video on my channel that so many people like will message me about that has to do with backtesting. How I literally go through and I show, all right, guys, I want you to go to a trade that you would take, like whatever strategy, like a winning trade. What can you do and what kind of things can you add to figure out why that was the best time to take the trade? What was the best place to get out of the trade? What can you do to avoid maybe like drawdown if you were in draw, like whatever? There's all these different confluences that can be added to avoid bad setups. And all that comes down to is sample sizing the markets at, you know, certain sessions, certain pairs, try and stick to like the same type of strategy. And then over time, you're going to realize, all right, every time that this occurs and there's not a low to take out before tapping into my zone, I lose. It's like, all right, well, now I have to wait every single time I want to take a trade. There has to be like an internal low to take out before I take the trade. You know what I'm saying? And that comes with experience and sample sizing, like you said. So I was a big person. Like I said, when I learned that from Don Vo, I went and started doing that. I have a different strategy than him, but I was able to apply that to my own backtesting because I enjoyed backtesting. I did that all the time, whereas I would just rewind price and just candle by candle go through. And then, you know, I started sample sizing. All right, why am I backtesting the entire sessions? Let me just go to London session. And then, like I said, I started just backtesting each London session every single day, like an hour before a session open, like 11 p.m. my time, until like 2.5 hour session. I would just be on there just candle by candle, trying to figure out different strategies, different like patterns and stuff. A lot of people don't really enjoy patterns. And like, I wouldn't say I'm like a pattern trader. I'm more like price action, but there definitely is some patterns that like, you know, you're not going to just take it because it looks like, you know, just like a right shoulder, like a hedge or whatever. But I do think that there are patterns to look out for. One of them that I do is like a three-step strategy, which I teach. Like that's one of the first things I teach anyone who comes to my group, which literally consists of a liquidity sweep, break a structure in the other direction, and then create a fair value gap and tap into the zone. So for anyone out there who doesn't really, can't really visualize it, just think of a consolidation or something, and then the low getting taken out, getting in early sellers, and then getting an immediate closure and like volume in the other direction. That's then breaking the high. A break of structure to me is whatever, you know, supply created the break of that structure, like the low. I'm now waiting for that to get taken out, because if that gets taken out, that to me is like a market structure shift. So once that happens, I then identify, all right, liquidity was taken under, got early sellers in. They probably have their stop losses above here. Price just broke structure. If I get a pullback into my zone, I'm going to take the trade to continue. And that's like a pattern that I look for day in and day out that you can like literally look on at multiple timeframes. I got this from like Doyle too. Doyle, I don't know if you know Doyle Exchange.
Doyle's but, been on, yeah.
Yeah, he's a really good trader. He really opened my eyes to really cool supply and demand concepts and three-step. So definitely shout out to him for that. But it's just like that pattern to me, I see so often and can save a lot of people.
It's actually, I had Waka Asim on the show just a couple of weeks ago. And in fact, that's one of the patterns that he looks for all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's not necessarily, I think he's trading against it, but it's kind of the pattern that he's looking for. And there's a certain way that he trades against it, but and in certain times, it's not every day, it's not every session, yeah. But I mean, it's a really interesting pattern. And I think a pattern that most people need to know, or at least add into their arsenal, because it is that stop hunt sort of like all the players getting stopped out, the dumb money's getting stopped out, and you're staying in, or you're getting in with the smart guys who have stopped them out.
I'm a big believer in liquidity. Like I think that like there are a lot of places that obvious stop losses are that price is just going to go take them out before going. So that's why I always like kind of brought up before about like that, like a low gain taken out. So like if it comes to like, just imagine like a demand zone and price kind of like moves aggressively away from it. If it comes right back down to the zone, I'm not taking it. I need some sort of structure to fill and then have like a demand created. And I need that low to get taken out to tap into the zone, because like my kind of ideologies behind it is that if there's no low to take out before tapping into my zone, I might be the low. If that makes sense, my stop loss might be the low that's going to take it out. So,
And I mean, so at what point, like, let's just get into a bit of detail here. At what point of the low being taken out would you start to get in? Are you like looking at the bottom of the zone, or are you looking to wait for it to confirm some to some certain degree?
Yeah. So when it comes to like tapping into my zone, so like I said, if I have a loaded takeout, that's one of my confluences. I like a fair value gap above the zone. So if we're talking about like a demand setup, I need like a fair value gap right above the zone. And then when it comes to actually tapping into the zone, I don't like price to close or even tap into more than 50% of the zone. I think that that's just showing me that volume is pushing down. It's not really like a valid zone. You really want for supply and demand price to kind of tap that, show a rejection, and I'm taking at the 5-minute high to take price back up in the other direction. I really mainly enter on the 5 and 15 minute. But like I said, I really just look for direction and daily bias. And then I go to the lower timeframes, market my like 1 hour levels of supply and demand, look where liquidity is sitting at. And then I'm on the 5 and 15, marking up those zones, waiting for the retracements to then see if I get a reaction to my zones to take them. Like I said, a low to take out. So liquidity, I wait for a break of structure, make sure there's no liquidity sitting there. And I mean, I really do that. I have that entry type, and then I do Asian session liquidity sweeps. I don't know if you're really too familiar with that, but that's my other entry. Those are my three things I do.
Okay, cool.
The three steps, supply and demand, and liquidity sweeps of Asia session. That's really like the three like entry like types that I have.
I'll tell you what we might do is jump into a price chart after this and then show the guys how it all works, or at least some of it. So let's dive into your, I suppose, the prop challenges. So you sort of moved into prop trading, right, from your personal account. Are you now primarily, would you call yourself a prop trading trader, or are you more of a personal or a sort of 50-50 split?
I would say that prop firms definitely got to the position I'm at right now. I still do trade with prop firms, but I'm definitely trying to compound my live account. I've definitely traded my live account a lot more recently within the last like 4 or 5 months than before, because before I was strictly like a lot of prop firms. I just was like, I had a pretty decent amount of funding through MFF and some other firms and stuff, so I was pretty comfortable. And then once that got kind of taken away, I started really focusing on my live account, and I was like, you know what, I really like this. I'm making like a little bit less profits because not as big of a size account. I didn't want to risk a big size, but I was like, I have the same mindset like that. Now that I'm a little more comfortable and know about trading, I have that thing I said earlier where I know the skill set, and just compounding is going to, in the long run, make me the most. I don't really care if I'm, you know, cutting down half the profits at first. It's whatever to me. So I definitely would say I dabble in both now, but prop firms definitely got me to where I'm at.
And so in terms of the prop firms, it sounds like you've had a bit of experience there. So what was this? You passed the first one, didn't make a withdrawal. Then how did things go from there?
Failed. Oh my gosh. Failed so many. I dug a pretty deep, I wouldn't say like I dug a deep hole, but just like psychological wise, like just taking myself down of just like thinking about how I passed the first one, blew the account, and was like, oh, okay, now the second, all right, I'm going to buy another one and this one will be fine. Boom, blew that one. Oh, okay, that was just a fluke. I'm gonna buy another 100K. It'll be fine. Boom, failed that one. So I definitely went to just failing. And it's just, it was so many things that like were in my control, you know? Like there's a lot of things that can happen in the markets that are out of your control. All the things that were happening were in my control, just psychological wise, taking too many trades, just over risking, just being dumb. Like there's just so many. I have one story. It's probably like my third account. This is back in 2020. I had sell limits at 29K on Bitcoin, or 28.5. I listened to the signal provider who was telling me Bitcoin's going down. When 28.5 gets broke, Bitcoin's done. It's going to zero. I think it literally rallied from that 28.5 to then the 62 or whatever, 72,000 it ended up hitting. Like that was the lowest point Bitcoin had gone. That was literally the last little sweep before the huge rally. And I'm pretty sure I held that way more than I was supposed to. And that was such an awful trade. Who even trades Bitcoin? I don't want to say that, I'd call anyone out, but who even trades Bitcoin? Like, come on. Like, on like your Forex account, like make that separate or something. Cause I would do that also. I would trade like gold, GJ, GU, Bitcoin. Come on now.
Yeah. It's that sort of like, I mean, one thing I suppose it does, you do learn from that is just don't take advice from anyone. Like it's got to be your own decision and your own alone. Don't, if anyone's saying this thing's going up or this thing's going to be good or whatever, just, it's like thumbs up, catch up with you. I'm not taking that advice.
Yeah.
if it stumbles in my way and my system says yes, then okay, maybe I will, but I'm not listening to your advice.
Just use them as a confirmation.
Exactly. Or it's like just a coincidental confirmation that, that seems to be, you know, you might be like, your stop loss might be miles away. I don't know. You know, exactly. Your take profit might be very close. I don't know. So kind of, you kind of can't do that. Okay. So what about when you found success with the prop firms? How did that all transpire?
Well, like I said, I had passed the first one, so I had already passed, but I hadn't gotten that payout yet. When I came to my first payout, it was kind of a smaller payout, but it's because I won the first one, but honestly closed out pretty fast because I wanted to be in profit. That second trade was a loss, and that third trade was a pretty decent, I think like 2% win or something. And I got my little payout. I think it was like $2,300 or something. And that was like a lot for me. I was like, dang, this is real. You know, once you get that deal payment, you know, I was like, dang, this is kind of crazy. Like, you know, I'd got the money back on top of it that I paid for the challenge. And I wouldn't say that there was like a defining moment that I started doing well with the prop firms. Because like I said, there was like plenty of times that I would have thought, like I thought I was profitable because I was getting these little payouts. But looking back, like, you know, I don't think I was like as good of a trader as I thought I was at that time. You know, I wish I could go back and humble myself a little, you know. But I would say that the biggest things when it came to my success with prop firm challenges is learning risk to reward and proper risk management. You know, when it comes to prop firm challenges, it's really about the probabilities and rigging the odds in your favor, just tweaking them a little bit to be able to, you know, get over that profit target. 10%, you know, at that time, because now it's like most of them are like 8%, but you know, 10% in 30 days is not a really easy thing to do. Yeah. So at that time I was really pushing myself to get past them and then being down on myself if I wasn't, you know, like, dude, there was plenty of times that I would finish a challenge 6% in profit, you know, and get a free retry. But it's like, I couldn't get to that 10%. It's just so crazy. Now I'm so glad there's like the no time limits and there's so many like things that prop firms do to help you out. But that on top of risk management, I use magic keys. You know what magic keys are?
Yeah. I've got a set of trader keys here.
I got my magic keys right here as well. Yeah. So that was honestly a big thing that helped me with my, like, I had already passed a bunch of prop firms before, but once I got magic keys for some reason, I just noticed that like my losses were so strict, and then my winners were like even sometimes being a little like bigger or whatever because I was properly risking. Like, you literally are getting the exact proper lot size every single time. Because one thing that I think a lot of people sleep on is that like some people are using the same lot size for a 20 pip stop loss as the same as like a 10, you know? Yeah. So like, no wonder you're not making the same amount of profit, you know what I'm saying? So
I mean, I had this problem yesterday actually. I ended up like I'd missed the entry, but it was still because I was a limit order. It had gone into some like negative drawdown on what I would have entered. And I was like, oh, I've missed the entry. Right. I'll get in with a stop order. And I'm like, okay, because I use an EA that's not magic keys, and it's just something I created.
Nice.
And I couldn't put the stop order in there for it to set because of I was only going to take a limit. And I was like, God damn it. I'll guess what the lot size is going to be. I can probably guess there or thereabouts because it's all copying across to other accounts. Anyway, put it in and I was way off. And I'm like, you muppet. And then I ended up having to, I was like, right, okay, I'm going to have to close. I knew how to close partials. And so I was like, I'm going to have to close like, I think I traded five lots on gold, and I had to close four of them to get to the actual risk that I wanted. And I was like, okay, all I need it to be is like $250 in profit, and then I can close it and I'll take the commission. Got to like 145, and then it went back to 3,000 like in loss. And I'm like, I thought, okay, it's probably not going to hit the stop loss anyway, but it did get back down to the 250 eventually after about
know,
6 hours. And I'm like, then I closed it out. Then it went back into drawdown again. I'm like, okay, at least I took a 1 hour on it in the end. But getting that risk right is
so important.
Thing, isn't it?
It's so critical. You take one bad loss and it'll wipe out, like, you have to like make five wins to even get back that loss, like that stupid miscalculation, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, exactly. It was just like this. I mean, I learned the lessons again and again and again. But anyway, what about your risk to reward? So you talked about 2-to-1 there. I mean, what are you doing now?
So I have different types of things I like to teach to my group about when to close. When it comes to supply and demand, I'm definitely someone who likes to vouch. Like, if we're getting in at this 15-minute demand at this low of structure, like, I really want to try and hold to the highs. Or if it's like a liquidity sweep of Asia lows, like, I'm holding to the highs. Anything in between, you know, if I get into profit or whatever, I'll put stops to break even after like a 1-to-1 or 1-to-2, just to mitigate risk. But I would say from all my back tests and sample sizing, my usual risk to reward is like a 1 to 3, but I like aiming for like 1 to 5s, 1 to 4s, just because, like I said, that's what a lot of the, a lot of my trades just play out as, because like I said, if I'm getting in at some sort of demand with like a, like this, even like a small stop loss, if I'm getting on like a GU and I have like a 5 pip stop loss, I only have to hit 25 pips and I'm at a 1 to 5, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah. It's just structure is really, I would say.
And like with the risk reward, sorry, with that sort of risk reward, 1 to 3, I mean, what would be in your back test, what would have been the win rate to get the 1 to 3?
The win rate to get the 1 to 3s? Oh, I mean, I have a pretty solid win rate. I'm in like this high 60s to the high 70s. It really just depends. Like last year, I finished the whole year off at 73.8%. I write down every single trade that I call out and everything. So the one thing I changed about my trading journal this year is not only recording my win rate, but then also I'm now recording my risk reward. So I will know at the end of this year, like, okay, I'm actually like would have made this percent. So I don't have like the exact data of what like maybe I did last year or whatever, but my win rate for those 1 to 3s, like I said, is like around like a 60-70% percent
pretty high
win rate. Yeah.
When you were like going through the back test phase, I mean, what were you sort of looking at? Were you going like, okay, if I'd taken 1 hour, I would have made this much. If I'd taken 2 hour, I would have made this. 3 hour, that. Da, da, da. I mean, what was that sort of your way about it? Because I mean, I've done back tests before. I've gone like, I'm going to target the highs and lows, and then I look at it and go, well, in actual fact, I was better off targeting the just a fixed 1 or 2 hour or a 3 hour, or taking partials at 1 and getting out at 3. I mean, how did you sort of do the maths on that?
So I have a counter kind of strategy I use to actually pull profits out of the market. So I was, you know, I got a good question one day. Everyone was asking me like, all right, Luca, why do you not have your closing partials, or why? Cause like I would, but I guess I would kind of close partials in weird places. So I finally was like, all right, I'm going to go to the drawing board. I started backtesting. And I was like, all right, what can I do to get the most money out of the market? Cause my strategy works. I'm getting into profit. What can I add to that? Every time I'm in profit, I actually know the best place to close at. So I teach this all the time. And it's going to sound weird, but I use the 8 smooth moving average.
Okay.
And I'll tell you how. So why I use that is like, let's say we have break a structure. We have a nice demand set up and it's coming down, rejecting. We gain at the 5-minute high and we're getting that impulse. When it comes to supply and demand, usually what happens is, you know, I've been trading with the MA for so long, I kind of can envision it in my head. But when you have that impulse up, it's kind of going above the MA. And usually when it comes back down, it's closing right back below. Usually at the break of that 5-minute high, I like the in confluence. It's going back, closing back above the 8. And then once it has that volume on that push, just like this is just from my back testing. Like I have like the actual like, you know, data to like back it up. But I've just noticed that like I did 3 different things. I did the ASMA. I did holding to the high of the session, and I did closing at the break of 5-minute lows. Those are 3 different exit criteria. I just backtested for hours and hours a day and said, what at the end of these months, I actually am going to have the highest profit at? Because there's sometimes that like holding to the highs, I would get like a lot of risk to reward, but at the end of the month, I was getting hit break even so many times that I wasn't actually pulling profits out. So back to the ASMA. I noticed that there's plenty of times that you'll get that impulse, price will go up and it'll be going in your direction. And every time it's coming down to make like a higher low, it's usually using the ASMA as a little support. It's just bouncing off of it. And usually it'll bounce off of it and then continue up. And then whenever we kind of get that kind of consolidation, it closes back below it, I'll close little partials and put stops to break even. And like I said, the one thing I just have noticed is like, let's say I took a 1-to-1 trade, which, you know, I don't close that 1-to-1, you know, like I rather get hit a break even. I've done this plenty of times that you'll see like a really quality setup go 1-to-1. And then you literally can wait for the ASMA and then you got at least can close out profit for a 0.4% win instead of holding to either break even, or it would have turned out as a loss if you would have kept holding. So once again, this is just from my back testing and data. This isn't just me just talking and saying, oh, I think this is the thing. I've literally like spent hours back testing and going, you know what? If I really just like pay attention to every single time that, because I'm a scalper, like if I get that impulse and price is hitting the demand, I have a 5 pip stop loss, I'm in profit 10 pips. If it kind of consolidates and goes down 3 more pips, I'll close for that 7 pips, which is like a 1.2% win. You know what I'm saying? So It's just to me is a really good way to teach beginners a way to extract money out of the markets besides just their psychology.
Yeah.
You know,
no, that's so nice. Yeah, it's nice. So like, I mean, what time frame are you entering in on?
5 and 15, mostly the five.
Okay. And what does your typical trading day look like?
London session. I live stream 3 times a week at 11 p.m. PST, which is an hour before, you know, London opens. I usually live stream from 11 to around 2 a.m. So I do like that 3 hour window and I just trade that. I like, especially lately, pre-London's been pretty good, but I don't really trade pre-London. I like to wait for London volume. But yeah, I'm trying to catch some, like, usually, honestly, 30 minutes after London open, like 12:30 my time, I get some good setups.
And how do you, like, how do you stay active at that time? Like, you know, alert and awake.
Just, I would say kind of sculpting my lifestyle around what I have to do. You know, I tried New York. I didn't like it as much. I'm not as much as the morning person as much as I don't really like volume as much. Like, you know how just like much volume and just like whipsaw-y so many indices are during New York open and stuff. Like I like waiting for closures. I like waiting for break of structure, whatever it is. So I just, you know, I rather do anything than trade Asia session. So no, I'm kidding. I like Asia session a little bit. It has good moves, but I just always kind of like stuck to myself as like a London trader. So I was like, all right, I just need to kind of like, you know, sculpt my lifestyle to make sure that I'm awake at those hours. I'm actually alert because there are those times that like, it's getting to like that 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And I'm just like, guys, I'm not in the right mental space to call a profitable trade. I'm just gonna go to bed. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that happens sometimes, but you know, I don't have a day job. I'm a full-time trader. During the day, I spend a lot of the time just doing like one-on-ones teachings and then, you know, hanging out and just and stuff. So, yeah.
So you kind of like, I'm going to wake up at 11 a.m. kind of dude or?
Yeah, I wake up at around like 10:30, 11.
Right. Okay.
But cool. About like 3, 4. Last night I called a trade at 4:30 a.m. UJ sells. 1 to 13, 30% trade last night.
Right. 1 to 13. Yeah. Oh, awesome. Yeah, it's actually
still going.
So you miss out in the morning, but I mean, like, I suppose, you know, you get most of the day anyway. So it's not like you're sort of completely missing out on the sunlight and you live in LA.
Yeah, exactly. I get to miss that, especially like the early morning. Like, I like to surf and stuff too. So it's like everyone goes out and like we'll surf in the morning and be all crowded. And it's like when they all go to work, I'll go in after and have my time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A lot more chill.
Perfect. Now, what do you think in the beginning made you different from the average mum or dad trader out there that's, you know, struggling with this?
You know, going back to like what I said a little bit ago about being open-minded, that was a huge thing. But there's a really good quote that I heard recently from, I actually heard it from Jay Dunn Trades, which is a really good options trader, but he heard it from Rake Trades. And it is that embrace the suck. Embrace that you're going to suck at trading, that you're going to lose, that you're going to be a bad trader. If you are okay with being a loser, you will become a winner. That is just, in my opinion, so freaking true, especially with trading, is that I was so okay with losing because I knew in the long run that, all right, I'm going to fail this so many times that I'm going to eventually figure out what to do right. You know what I'm saying? So I would just say that I was never really discouraged. I was a full-time college student. So I was like, you know what? If this doesn't work out, I'm getting a four-year degree. I wanted to become a financial advisor, which I had a job lined up. When I graduated college, I had a job lined up in San Francisco as a financial advisor. I was going through the whole onboarding process and took that leap of faith. You know, I was like, you know what? I'm doing good with trading. I want to try and do this full-time. I don't want to get into the rat race just to quit. Why not try to trade first? And if that doesn't work out, then go. It's 9 to 5, best decision I could have ever made. Like, I literally think about it all the time.
It is a great quote, actually. And I think it aligns across the entire trading journey. Like, every element of trading that you do, you've got to embrace the fact that it's going to suck. I mean, like, to the point where the back testing, I think the only thing that doesn't suck is when you are watching a video from somebody, some mentor or someone else who's like teaching you something new and you're going, oh, really? Okay, that's really cool. That's cool. Oh, awesome. Oh, brilliant. You're telling me how I'm going to make money. This is the best thing, right? And that's why people strategy hop. And that's the thing that they love doing the most. Like, oh, I'll go to the next one. I go, because this doesn't suck. But the thing that sucks is backtesting that and finding out that, oh, it lost here, or the time it's going to take to back test, all that kind of stuff that's going to suck is what you need to embrace. I love it. What about like from a mindset point of view? I mean, you've obviously had to overcome some things in your journey. What tips and tricks do you have for the guys listening out there?
being active, I'm telling you guys that I was, you know, I was a D1 athlete. I played lacrosse and stuff. And I feel like there was a time when I started training a lot that I stopped being as active. And that like, kind of reflected in my trading. So I really recommend the guys that if you're out there, go and throw on a trading night interview and go to the gym. Like, come on. That's like literally all I do is like go and just listen. Just be open to ears to just like, there's so many things that you can learn off the charts that's going to help you in the charts, like just countless and countless times. So I would think working out and meditating, I wouldn't say like I like full on like have like a routine to meditate, but I will for sure go and sit on the ground quiet and just like think and just like talk affirmations and whatever, you know what I'm saying? I think that manifestation and stuff is honestly really true. I manifested to where I'm at right now, you know? So just little things like that, I think is just really going to keep you active. And just keep your brain functioning, put you in the best like mental state to trade. Because if you're already are unhealthy and you're eating bad, not working out, and you're also losing in trading, bro, I mean, you're just going to dig yourself a hole. You know what I'm saying? So definitely have that thing to escape, you know?
I think what you said battles. At the start of the show was quite important, as well as being open-minded to different things. Like, I mean, I see in the comments a lot of closed-minded people who are, you know,
crazy,
but they can't see the wood for the trees, right? It's like, yeah, like, you know, I mean, I've got an interview coming up actually, and I may have even dropped before yours, where the guy is a very, very good trader, but doesn't probably relay that across in the interview as well as, you know, somebody would expect. And I think because of that, he's probably going to get a few comments. I'm not going to say who it is. But the thing is, I see the value in it, and I don't know if everyone's going to be as open-minded, which I think you need to be in this industry to really give yourself a chance to succeed. Now,
in life too.
Oh, yeah, exactly. In everything. Mm-hmm. So what about like, if you're going to say, right, go away, study this stuff on a price chart. Well, if you had to say three things, what would they be?
Liquidity, supply and demand zones, 4-hour daily breaker structures. Like, I think being able to identify the daily bias is super underrated, because like there's so many people who like will go to hour chart, go to 4-hour daily, and it'll be super bearish, but then they're strictly on the 5-minute going, oh, I'm gonna catch this little buy right here. That buy is just a mini little 5-pip pullback to the overall move. So I think being able to identify on the higher time frames, if price is in a consolidation, did it break structure, whatever directions is going in. And then liquidity, if you're getting into a trade and you clearly like have your stop loss in a place that like is just obvious, you see all these equal lows and stuff. Like, this is kind of the difference, guys. When I first started to trade, I was taught that if something had like 3 touches, that was a strong support. You should take the trade off of that. No, to me, that is a level that I think is going to get broken to take all those stop losses out to then go back in that direction. And I'm going to get all that, you know, I'm accumulating all that money and distribute in the other direction, because that's just how the market moves. You know, you got to figure out, why do you keep losing? You know, if you keep getting in the same trade and putting your stop loss in the same place and losing, what if you just got in the trade where your stop loss was? I don't know. There's some people who like, you know, strictly trade liquidity. I added as a confluence. There's sometimes within like December and January, like the end of December in 2023, and then just this beginning of this month, there's been a lot of times where I'll have a very beautiful 5-minute, 15-minute supply zone that will get wicked out and get manipulated, but I'll still actually, which I, you know, I definitely for beginners wouldn't recommend, because you got to learn how to take like the zone entries, but there definitely is times where I'll be able to identify like, this is just liquidity grab. It's just manipulating to go back in the other direction. And I'll get in on the position where like everyone's trying to buy, I'm just going to sell. Like, it sounds bad, but it's just kind of like a part of what I look for, you know?
Awesome. Now, before we dive into a quick fire round here, like if there was one thing you'd recommend the retail trader spend the next month mastering, what would it be?
Like I said, I really think risk management and then holding your trades and finding like where to get out of a trade is so key. Being able to identify where to put your stop loss. A lot of people have like much larger stop losses than they need. I think like, you know, don't be greedy and have like tiny little stop losses, but figure out ways to be able to like lower your stop losses to overall increase your risk to reward. One of my best friends, I was kind of talking about earlier, Ollie Trades, he will have like a 3 to 5 pip stop loss and catch 100 pips. It's like crazy. And it's like, instead of having a 50 pip stop loss, you understand, all right, this is the last valid place that if price breaks this, it is no longer valid. So that, you know, I could try and put a 20 pip stop loss just to be safe, but that's just going to invalidate thing. I trade structure. I don't care about the pip count. I don't care about like any of that type of stuff. I trade structure. I trade like candlestick, like I said, patterns, where if it's setting up, stop loss could be 4 pips or the stop loss could be 12 pips. I'm still going to take the trade, but I got to risk properly. Because if I call sell GJ and someone does 10 lots on a 12 pip stop loss, and I sell GJ the next day and it's a 4 pip stop loss, you're going to make, when TP1 smash, you're going to be like, oh, why didn't I make? You have to know how to properly risk. Yeah. So,
because there's obviously that commission and stuff with like, you know, exactly, smaller stop loss, which when you're doing 10 lots, that could be $400, like 100%. Kind of thing. And that's your half your 1 hour if you're going to get out there. Now, right, let's dive up into the quickfire round here. So how long did it take you to go from newbie to what you'd consider consistently profitable?
About 2 years, 1.5, 2 years.
What's your favorite entry setup?
My favorite entry setup is like a 3-step setup: liquidity grab, break a structure, leave me a fair value gap into my zone, and I'll take at the 5-minute high.
Do you have a recommended trading book or resource?
I would say Trading in the Zone. I think psychology is one of the biggest, like, you know, things that hold a lot of traders back. So I think just trying to, you know, read those type of books and figure out how to basically manage your psychology and stuff is huge.
If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say if I could leave you with one piece of advice, it would be open-minded and be grateful. Manifest your dreams into reality. There's no one that's holding you back to what you want to accomplish besides you and your belief. So I really just think that, you know, don't listen to anyone around you that's trying to hold you back. I'm living proof of like someone who, you know, I came from, you know, a college background where like when you're in college, a lot of people don't have that entrepreneurial mindset. It's graduate to get a 4-year degree. I was in a fraternity and had a lot of people, you know, who, I don't want to say didn't believe in me, but just thought it was kind of like I was wasting my time. And now it's just crazy, like looking that it was the best decision I ever did. And I was able to just not listen to what anyone had to say, do what I knew that I could do. And like I said, I manifested to where I'm at now. So I know everyone out there can do the same.
Brilliant. Look, and before we wrap up, what's the best way for traders to get hold of you?
You can follow me on Instagram at luca.nolimit. I have my YouTube channel, luca.nolimit, as well. I have a podcast there that I totally, like I said, influenced from Trading Net. I used to, like I said, in my dorm room, used to sit around and watch Trading Net interviews all day. So that gave me, you know, the ideas to start my own. Those are the places you can reach me at. And then if you want to see me live trade, I literally live trade, call live signals, and I give away 50K accounts every single night on the Trading with Clarity YouTube. There.
Well, look, a big thank you to Luca for sharing with us today. Everything we discuss here are going to be in the show notes. There's a link underneath the video or in the podcast description. Go and check it out. Or if you're over on Trading Net, search for Luca in the search box. Until next time, wish all my listeners trading happiness and success. So there you have it, folks. Interview done and dusted with Luca. Now, as I mentioned at the start, we've got that video where he breaks down those Asian session liquidity grabs. Go and check that out now. And whilst you're checking that out, go and check out Blue Guardian's 10% off discount. We've got Black Bull Markets giving you a bonus on your deposit, and also Apex Trader Funding have got a bonus as well. So folks, all over there in the description of either the podcast or YouTube video, depending on where you're watching this or listening. Folks, thank you for watching, and we will see you in the next episode of Trading Net.